Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's happening?
Salutes to Dakota and Dakota's father and the viral videos that we just kept seeing all night long of him at the game him in his living room when he heard that the Suns had come through with the tickets for him. It came through with the win.
It was
bad news for the Kings last night, thanks to Dakota.
It really was. Yeah. You know, got a message from his father thanking me, and I said, no, thank you. Like, you know, you gave me something to be really happy and joyous about, the whole day. I was just really on cloud nine and really just happy to see Dakota have a great time and feel like, you know, we can give back and stuff like that. So I thank the father because, him doing that bad news with his son and us getting a chance to see it, and it just really brought a lot of joy to me throughout the day, and I know all of you guys too. So it was great that he had that day, that Dakota had his, a special day for himself, coming on the radio show with us and doing bad news for the Kings and then going to the Kings game against the Suns and watching the Suns get a victory and doing his defense chant. I was just really happy to see it.
Certainly appreciate the Phoenix Suns for coming through with the tickets for Jason and Dakota. You know, that they tweeted him almost right away and said, we're hooking you up with tickets. And it was really cool to see the Suns set him up like that. And yeah, it was bad news for the Sacramento Kings. And the reason why is what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in.
Mikal Bridges has it on the right side as the final seconds will tick away. And the Suns will chalk up their 40th win of the year, winning 40 out of 55 and setting the standard in the West. And this one is over and the Suns win. The Suns come up with what they just had to do in this fourth quarter and get the victory. The final here tonight in Phoenix. The Suns 122, Sacramento 114. The Suns win number 40 on the year.
40.
40 wins.
40.
Yeah, last time that happened was 2014. I said to you guys in the show meeting that we had, it's like, man, I almost wish it was an 82-game season to see what they could get to. Could they get to 60?
Yeah.
Like, how far can they go? And we're not going to get it because the season's shortened, but they've got 40 wins right now. There's an injury to Donovan Mitchell for the Utah Jazz. He's been taken out of the game. There's that play in today.
We do have an update on that, by the way.
Yes, let's get that update.
So he was taken out of the game, and Sarah mentioned this in her update. Adrian Wojnarowski reports x-rays were negative, and an MRI is coming tonight on Donovan Mitchell's sprained right ankle. It's a lower ankle sprain, according to Woj. And there is some early optimism that it is not a major injury to him. They will know more after the MRI tonight.
I don't root for injuries to anybody. I never do. I hope that he's okay and that he gets better. If he's not, we deal with it. And, you talk about it like, being an advantage for other teams, including the Suns. Of course it is. Can't deny that. You never want to see a guy get injured and get hurt like that. But he's a key player on the Utah Jazz. And if he was down for any extended period of time, that does change the balance of power in the West, especially when it comes to getting that number one seed.
No question. But I would say before the last 5 minutes, anybody who had seen the video, anybody who had seen him being help off the court, I saw it on social media. I showed you the injury when it happened in kind of almost like real time. I'm very surprised it's not more severe than what they're initially saying. It looked bad.
The Jazz were down big. They've come back to take the lead by 7 in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes and 45 seconds left.
So they're rallying without him.
They have rallied without Donovan Mitchell. He only played 21 minutes in the game. They were down by 14, I think you said at one point.
Was that right?
Yeah, they were down by 14 at the half.
And now they're up by 7. So just keeping our eyes on that Jazz game because they are playing now an afternoon game.
Did we get just real quick? Did we get an answer as to why they're playing an unusually timed?
I asked Kellen Olsen, our basketball nerd. No idea.
No idea.
He says they're also playing very early tomorrow as well.
I wonder if there's like some event going on in their arena or something that's forced them out. I don't know. It's just a very odd time and a very odd day to be playing a game. Right in the middle of the afternoon
on a Friday.
It's
people have jobs.
It's weird.
It's a rare afternoon weekday game.
Got to get to the bottom of this. Don't know what the answer is. Okay, but we will. We've got the best team
at the station on it right now. Sarah's working on it. Jordan's working
because
on it.
Because they have to play. Here's why. Unlike the typical 7 or 8 p.m. tip-off, the Jazz and Pacers game will go underway, one, clearing the way for the Jazz to travel to Los Angeles to play the Lakers tomorrow at 2:30 p.m.
Oh, so tomorrow's early game is a
yes.
road game.
It's a road game. Tomorrow's early game is a road game, so they cannot have a night game and then play the Lakers 12 hours later.
Got it.
So it's like a nationally televised day game, I bet.
You would assume so, yeah.
I bet that's like an ESPN game or something like that.
Okay, there you go. Cool. There's your answer.
There we are.
Answers.
I'm glad I didn't do anything to clear that up.
Questions cool. asked.
I was working on it.
Answers found. Back to the Phoenix Suns and their 122-114 win.
Yes.
You cannot talk about that game without talking about DeAndre Ayton. It's the story of the game. And fourth
it's the story
quarter,
of the week, story of the month.
Man.
I mean, it's one of the best stories in the NBA. I mean, this kid is just absolutely dominating basketball games right now. 10 of 11 from the field, 6 of 6 from the free throw line. He led the team in points with 26. He led the team in rebounds with 11. He had four more offensive rebounds. And make no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They won this game because of what he did in the final 5 minutes. He came back into the game with 4 minutes and 57 seconds left. They brought back Booker. They brought back DeAndre Ayton. Carter went out. Cam Johnson went out. All you had after that, DeAndre Ayton, offensive rebound off a Book miss, and he scored. DeAndre, an alley-oop off a great pass from Book. He looked like he was at half court, and he threw an alley-oop to DeAndre for the basket. Then he hit two free throws. Then he hit two more free throws. Then he had a rebound of a Book shot. I mean, he was just – and then he had a face-up jumper over Barnes. He was unstoppable. I mean, there's no other way to say it. He was unstoppable. Booker scored no points in the fourth quarter. Chris Paul had two. And they won that game because DeAndre Ayton, there was no answer that Sacramento had for DeAndre Ayton.
Statistically, here's what it looked like. He had 10 of his 26 points in the fourth quarter. He had 4 of his 10 rebounds in the fourth quarter. He was, I believe, 4-4 from the line in the fourth quarter.
Made them all.
There were moments where we used to beg DeAndre Ayton to get 4 free throw attempts in a game. And he got 4 in the fourth quarter because of the level of aggression that he was playing with and how hard he was going after the basket. Monty Williams after the game, very happy.
For DA to be able to, you know, be the guy down the stretch, taking advantage of his size against their switches, which is something that, you know, earlier in the season, I don't think we would have done it as well.
Look, I know we're prone to a little hyperbole every now and then here on the Burns and Gambo show. This is a potentially Western Conference altering kind of development for the Phoenix Suns, the
Could
way
be.
DeAndre Ayton is playing.
Could be,
right? I mean, too early to know for sure, but if they've got, what, 17 games left in the regular season? We keep saying it. If this is who he's continuing to evolve into, can you imagine the threat come playoff time if this is the version of DeAndre Ayton that is there when the Suns are in the playoffs?
You think about the guys he might have to go up against. You might have to go up against Anthony Davis. You might have to go up against Rudy Gobert. You might have to go up against Nikola Jokic. Now, he may not get the better of those guys. There's a chance that he doesn't. But his continued development is a real positive sign for anybody who wasn't a fan of DeAndre's or thought they should have traded him or any of that stuff. His continued development, I mean, I think it gives everybody a reason to believe that the Suns are really heading in the right direction, that this kid has turned a corner, and a lot of the, you know, and there was a lot of doubts about him. Certain aspects of his game were doubted, and I don't know that those aspects are being doubted anymore.
No, not anymore. I mean, is everyone, I think, is, kind of holding their breath to make sure, like, the arrival is permanent, or at least as permanent as it can be for a 22-year-old kid, right? I mean, you got to take this all kind of with a grain of salt. But over his last 7 games, he's averaging 20 points per game. He's averaging 11 rebounds per game. He's shooting 73% from the floor, and they're a plus.
Say that part again.
73% from the floor.
That's
in his last 7 games.
Ridiculous.
They're a plus 63 when he's on the floor in his last 7 games. The first 7 games of March, 13 points per game, 7.5 rebounds per game, 59% from the floor. They were a plus 26. You can see the excitement. You can see the evolution and the development and why this might be a big deal, because this last 7-game version of DeAndre Ayton compared to the first 7 games of March version of DeAndre Ayton, that's the guy you can go
very far with
in the postseason.
You know what's gone? The hesitation to throw the ball to DeAndre Ayton in a low block. It's gone. There is no hesitation. They do it now. They're looking for him.
Yes.
It's not like, I don't want to give it to DeAndre. Pass it outside to the 3-point shooter. No, they're looking for him.
Yes.
They're getting the ball to him. They want to get the ball to him. I mean, that pass from Booker, he was somewhere between the three-point line and half court, and he just throws it up there, and DeAndre catches it and puts it in. You're not seeing the same hands where he fumbled the ball. You're not seeing him take the ball down anymore, which was a big Tom Chambers, Eddie Johnson, they would all complain about that, and they were exactly right. He would catch the ball, then he'd bring it down, and guys would swat it, and then he's getting it and going up. He's playing above the rim. Mm-hmm. He's playing so high that he's not bringing the ball back down where guys can now, okay, you bring it down, those little guys could swat at it all day long.
Yeah.
He's not even giving him a chance to do that. So
if I remember right on the alley-oop, I think he even, Ayton even gave Booker the point. He pointed to the rim from the baseline.
I don't remember that.
As if to say, hey, you know, and Book, yeah, sure, okay, I'll give it to you. Okay, so there's another level of that confidence. There's another level of that aggression. There's another level.
He wants it.
Hey, look, I got it. Just throw it right there. I'm going to catch it, and I'm going to dunk it. It's all starting to come together for him. It's all starting to come together for them.
Well, if it comes together for him, it comes together for them. I mean, it's that simple. If it comes together for him, then it's coming together for them, because he's got, you know, you've said it many times, he's the X factor in taking them to where they want to go.
Yeah, in winning regular season games, they were able to do it without this version of him. I don't think they can go very deep in the playoffs without, this version just adds a whole nother element to everything that
they're
doing.
Think about a team now. You want to focus your attention on trapping Booker or Chris Paul?
Yeah.
And what are you going to do with him?
Yeah.
That 7 foot guy that's scoring 70, he's hitting 75% of his shots. What are you going to do with him now?
You do not have to be a star athlete to get your signing bonus. Text the word bonus right now to 620-620. Then listen for your name this afternoon. 3:35 in the afternoon is when we're going to do this. You could win $500. Again, text the word bonus, 620-620 right now, or when it's safe to do so. It's the Arizona Sports signing bonus. Cardinals have been linked to wide receivers and cornerbacks and offensive linemen. Is there a position, a specific player, in fact, that everybody's overlooking? We'll suggest someone next on the Burns and Gambo Show. 2 weeks from right now, we will know who the first-round selection of the Arizona Cardinals was. We'll be talking about that player, what happened in the first round. We'll be inevitably preparing you for the second and third round of the NFL draft. That's all 2 weeks from right now. We're getting there. It's getting very, very close. And as our coverage really starts to ramp up for this obviously huge annual event, anybody who's listened to us, anybody who's listened to the station knows a lot of the names that we've focused on have come from very familiar positions of potential need. Cornerback, we've talked a lot about. Wide receiver, we've talked a lot about. Running back, we've talked a little bit about. Hell, we've even talked about tight end and whether the Arizona Cardinals should make a play and move up to get Kyle Pitts from Florida and how cost prohibitive that would be, but how much of a game changer he would be. There is a position and there is a player we haven't talked about. And yet you and I started talking off the air, was it yesterday? And
yes.
We had a conversation about him, and I thought, okay, maybe we should talk about this on the air a little bit, because maybe there's another name to consider here.
And I think that there is. And it's not a name that a lot of people are going to look at, because it's not a position of need. A lot of people are focusing on, you know, running back, wide receiver, cornerback, and for all the right reasons. I don't blame them. But there is a player that is a great defensive player that could possibly slip to 16. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Cardinals picked him. So I'm going to throw the name out there.
Okay.
I'm going to put it in my list as a guy that you've got to consider. That is the linebacker Micah Parsons from Penn State. Very dynamic player. And, you know, there's the potential that he's there at 16. The potential is there that he could be. He's the best linebacker in the group. But, you know, you look at the quarterbacks are going to go, and some of the offensive linemen are going to go, and the tight end is going to go, and the three receivers are going to go. And then you start saying, okay, what's the chances that, you know, this Penn State linebacker will be there? He ran a 4.39 40-yard dash on his pro day. He ran a 4.39 40.
He can fly. All right,
yep.
Before we get too deep in this, we've got our draft profile. Care to guess?
I'm going to go Maloney.
We have not played the Micah Parsons draft profile yet.
Who do you got?
I'm going to say that this is a Sarah Cazell special right
here. All right,
here
we go.
All right, you're ready.
Winner takes a 2-1 lead, by the way. We're tied 1-1.
Oh, are we keeping score on this?
I know it's 1-1, yeah.
Ooh, oh, it just got, the game is afoot. It just got a little bit better. Let's find out. the Micah Parsons draft profile.
Micah Parsons, linebacker, Penn State.
At 6'3", 245, Parsons has the foot quickness along with elite range with burst and speed rarely seen at linebacker. In 2019, Parsons led Penn State in tackles and tied for fourth in the FBS with four forced fumbles. He was praised inside Penn State's program for his highly competitive nature. He was named the conference's linebacker of the year in 2019, but opted out in 2020, citing concerns about COVID-19. NFL comp, Jaguars linebacker Miles Jack.
There you go.
The Mitch.
Yeah,
the
Mitch.
Very rare off-speed pitch.
Is he? Did he do an equal amount as you guys?
I think so. I think it was split three ways.
Oh,
equally.
Okay. All right.
Oh, really?
That makes it different. I thought that he didn't do anywhere near what you
and Maloney. Yeah, for some reason, I thought it was like 40% you, 40% Maloney, and like 20% Mitch. I didn't think this.
I believe it's equal.
Okay. All right.
I believe. So
just two linebackers have posted a sub 4.4 40-yard dash in the past 10 years. Micah Parsons is one, and another one is Isaiah Simmons. The question that a lot of people will ask is, can the Cardinals draft another linebacker 1 year after drafting Isaiah Simmons? It's a question you have.
That's the question I asked off the air when we brought this up yesterday. Yeah, that's the question I have. I'm very uncomfortable with this possibility. I'm not going to lie to you. Like all the other ones, I've said, okay, I can see it. Okay, I can see it. Yeah, I can see that too. Even a running back, right? You could kind of twist my arm and go, yeah, I can see how that guy might be a, you know, you're not going to sign him to a second contract, but I can see that. Man, you just drafted a freak athlete at linebacker in Isaiah Simmons a year ago.
Can you not have another freak athlete?
You can. You just walked away from a freak athlete at linebacker in Hassan Reddick, who took years to figure out where's the best spot to play him, what's his best fit, what's his natural position, what should he be due for. I feel like to do that again in the glow of Isaiah Simmons and kind of in the aftermath of the failure of Hassan Reddick is not my cup of tea, man.
Today.
It is not my. How do you feel? Okay, I understand the information you're presenting. How do you feel about this? Would you like it?
If they did this? It depends on who's there. Like, if we're sitting there at 16 and all of the cornerbacks and wide receivers and Avira Tuck is gone, I mean, listen, if it's him and Vera Tucker, I'm going Vera Tucker. You kind of know the way I feel that I really like that USC guard. But if he's gone and the top corners are good, so if it's him or Farley, the line or the corner, I'm going to go him. Now, I think that when I put my Gambo 5 together, that there's a really good chance that I'm going to have this kid in my Gambo 5.
Okay.
I think there's a really good chance that I'm going to put him there. Now, I got to try to see where he may be projected to go. But listen to this. He's 6'3", 246, projects as an off-the-ball linebacker in the NFL. Here's what he said. I played defensive end growing up and pretty much my whole life, so rushing the passer has never been a problem. And obviously what I showed at Penn State, going sideline to sideline, has never been a problem. A lot of teams have been talking about first and second down, having me go sideline to sideline, third down, having me go get the quarterback. So I think I'm going to walk into a great position. That's what he said.
Here's what James Franklin, his head coach, said on ESPN Radio on April 7th about how scheme diverse he is.
I think he can do a lot of different things. I think he can be a 3-4 backer. I think he can be a 4-3 backer. He literally, you know, when we recruited him out of high school, he went to Harrisburg High School. He played defensive end and running back. And that's how everybody, you know, was kind of looking at him as a defensive end in college. If you're interested and you have some free time, just go back and watch his highlights from high school. They're pretty impressive as a tailback. But we thought his ability to play tailback would allow him to play linebacker, and we had a need at linebacker, so we put him there. But he's kind of got the body. If he wanted to be 260 pounds, he could be 260 pounds. You know, he's just that type of athlete. And I think that's why so many people, you know, are attracted to him, because I think he can fit so many different spots in so many different systems.
God, you just took a guy like that the first round a year ago. You just did that. You did it 4 years ago with Hassan Reddick, and you didn't even want to bring him back for a fifth year. You let him walk as a free agent. I just, the whole.
Chandler Jones is probably going to need to be replaced soon.
I know.
Jordan Hicks is probably going to need to be replaced soon.
And that's the argument for. And I acknowledge that. That's the pro for Michael Parsons is that you don't have a young edge rusher on your roster,
nope.
right? You don't have anybody up and coming in that position. You've got 1 year left to Chandler Jones. He might walk. You've got Marcus Golden on, what, a one-year deal, right? You got J.J. Watt on, in essence, a two-year deal.
Jordan Hicks,
his contract is coming to a close. You don't have that guy. I admit that.
You just said it.
I know.
You just basically spelled out the reason to take this kid if he's there at 16.
But that doesn't mean I agree with it. I spelled it out. Yeah, but that doesn't mean I agree with it.
Okay.
That doesn't mean
that doesn't mean
I'm saying go get him. I'm just telling you if I'm selling it, that's how I'm selling it. But I'm not buying it. I just think that boy, you've really swung a lot of bats at that pitch the last few years. You really want to swing at it again?
I mean, I think Isaiah Simmons is going to be really good.
Well, and then maybe that answers a lot of your questions.
I'm just looking at your linebackers, Chandler Jones, Jordan Hicks, Isaiah Simmons, Marcus Golden. Like, you the only long-term guy you got is Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, okay, so just everybody kind of sock that away and keep that in your mind. The Diamondbacks' bats came alive yesterday in the nation's capital. Can they carry that over to today? That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo talk Diamondbacks baseball with a D-backs broadcaster, The Booth.
It's a fact check. I'm back. You back. We back. It's a fact.
Presented by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, the official wine of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, we back.
Diamondback broadcaster, Sirius XM radio host, and purveyor of fine encased meats. He is Mike Farron. He joins us here for our weekly In the Booth segment where we get the privilege of talking with one of the Diamondbacks broadcasters for a few minutes, talking D-backs baseball after the Diamondbacks clobber the Washington Nationals yesterday 11-6. As the opener of a 10-game road trip. How you doing, Mike? Thanks for coming back on. We appreciate it.
Why does privilege sound like such a loaded word when you use it, Dave?
We're privileged to have you on. It's a privilege to welcome you into our house.
Word. He uses a lot of big words. He has that Northern Arizona University education.
Yeah, it's
so there's always 10 words a show that I don't understand that he uses, but he uses big ones.
If you don't understand privilege, then you've got a lot of issues. But also, I wonder what you really learn at NAU.
Well, you learn that
We have the same job and I didn't even go to school.
If you know the bouncers at one of the local bars, you can get in when you're underage. I learned that at NAU. Does that count?
That's about what I learned. Hustle a fin to get to where you want to go.
Exactly.
Let's start with this. I almost forgot how much Asdrubal Cabrera meant to the Nationals that year they won the World Series when he came over and got an opportunity to play second base every day. That was a really great ovation that those fans gave him. It seems like they have a lot of respect for Asdrubal Cabrera there.
Yeah, I mean, I lived in D.C. for a long time, and remember, that was the second time that Cabrera had come to the Nationals in a pennant stretch, too. They had acquired him from Cleveland, I believe. It was either Cleveland or Tampa Bay. I got to go back and look now. I guess it was Cleveland in 2014 for the stretch run, and he wasn't quite as good then, but they had had a hole at second. And he really did play well for Washington down the stretch that year. It had been so long since D.C. and the area surrounding it had a championship in baseball. I mean, you have to go back to the 20s when the Senators won. That there are and the way that they went about doing it, you know, being up against the wall against the Dodgers and, you know, rallying against Greinke in Game 7 of the World Series and even the, 19-31 start that they had. There are some mythical qualities that that team has taken on in D.C. So the fact that Cabrera was only there for a couple months and yet was viewed that way by the fans, I think, is a testament to how much they really, really connected with and loved that team. That, you know, they've had some really good ones over the last decade. That's the one that finally broke through. And the way they did it is kind of, you know, worst to first in the same season really, I think, resonates with them there. And I think it speaks to Cabrera. You know, that dude's a pro, man.
Yeah.
In every sense of the word, like at bats, clubhouse, all of it. He's just a really special guy.
He looks like one of those guys that even though physically he might not look it, he looks like he could play another 2 years if he wanted to, just because he knows the game so well.
I was big fans of his on the 86 Mets with Doc Gooden and Darryl Strawberry. I mean, he was such a good part. part of that.
It's just a better option than Rafael Santana at short.
Yes, you know, exactly. And Tim Tuffle. Yeah, Tim Tuffle.
No, you know, I tend to agree that he's got something left in the tank. His hands are so good. He's got such a strong arm. Like, he can play third base. Now, can he play every day? Probably not. Are they going to probably play him more than they want to while Walker is out? Yeah, I think that that's probably the case. But they don't want to. I know they don't want to run into a situation like they did with Adam Jones a couple of years ago, where Jones was brought in to be an extra outfielder and play part time. And because of the Souza injury, they ended up having to run him down. And remember, there was like a 2 month stretch where Adam's slugging percentage was in the 200s. And I don't think they want to do that with. I know they don't want to do that with Cabrera, but I do think as a role player, he's. Definitely a valuable guy still.
Mike Farron, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, talking D-backs baseball. From your kind of trained eye and perspective, what did Merrill Kelly do to settle down in yesterday's start? Because that thing was shaping up to be a early hook, quick exit for him, and he was able to settle into that game and give them six. What did he do to allow that to happen?
Well, I didn't think he pitched that poorly in the first inning. I mean, if Andrew Young makes the play on what was a fairly routine ball to left field, he might have been out of that inning without any run scoring or maybe one run scoring. And so I didn't really necessarily think he needed to settle down. I mean, maybe he made a mistake to Castro on the homer, but I thought that was, in a lot of respects, the combination of what we saw in glimpses from Merrill in the first two starts. The first start, we saw good velocity in San Diego, but by his own admission, he was nibbling a little bit. He was on the plate a little bit more in Denver in his second start, but he just didn't have the stuff wasn't quite there. It was cold and windy, and so that may have impacted it. But last night, we saw some 94s early. I thought he moved the ball around well. I thought he used all four of his pitches. He threw them for strikes. He moved them around the zone. So I didn't really think he was pitching all that poorly in the first inning so much as, he got dinged by a little bit of bad defense. And you got to love Andrew Young, redeeming himself after that, too, with a grand slam. Like, that had to feel really good for him, because I kind of put Merrill behind the eight ball, but he was still able to pitch into the seventh yesterday.
Yeah, and it was good. They needed to get some innings out of him, especially after that first inning. But he did settle down and allowed them to win that game. After that rough first inning. What I liked about yesterday's game was getting Carson Kelly up in the batting order. I'm real excited about him. Big part of the trade for Paul Goldschmidt, with him and Luke Weaver coming over. First year, I felt really good about him. Last year, big step backwards. But this year, seems like Carson Kelly is really off to a great start. And I like that Torrey moved him up in the lineup.
Yeah, I liked it yesterday, too, and I think it makes sense based on his history of crushing lefties, that and especially with the fact that he was hot right now, that it made sense for him. He's back in the lineup today, but a little bit further down. I think, Carson really went through some struggles in spring training with results. He's made some mechanical adjustments to try and be a better balance at the plate, and I know it was frustrating that he wasn't getting the results in spring, but it seems like as soon as the bell rang, he's been on it. A couple base hits that he dumped the other way seem to have got him going. And, he puts together good at-bats. He's not a crazy strikeout guy. He's going to see some pitches. He's going to draw some walks. And, I think it's nice to have him performing well, because it helps to lengthen out the lineup a little bit. And, listen, they're going to need as much length as they can get over these next couple weeks with no Marte and no Walker.
With on that topic, Mike Farron, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, no Marte. We're not exactly sure when he's going to return. With the return of Ahmed, Torrey kind of referenced this sort of turntable, if you will, of various guys playing various spots over the course of the field. Is there a guy in that mix, be it Rojas or Van Meter or somebody else, that you think is in a good position to sort of establish himself as the guy, or is it truly going to be a real rotation as we wait for Marte to come back?
Yeah, I think it's a really fun question to ask, because I think there are going to be varying thoughts. I'm a Josh Van Meter guy. I really like Josh Van Meter. I think that what we've seen from him, there's definitely pull power there. I think he's more athletic than you realize at first glance. I think he plays a solid enough second base. It's not, Gold Glove second base, but it's solid enough. And I think he's a guy that can be there. What's interesting is that if you talk to the organization, scouts and analysts, the guy that they're still on is Josh Rojas. They think he's going to be that guy that ends up settling into that. The results haven't been there for Rojas, but he looked great in spring. So I think it remains to be seen a little bit. I like Matheson's at bats. Like we talked about, Young's homer yesterday was really cool. Like that was a great moment. But I think it's probably one of those left-handed hitters that maybe establishes themselves as getting the bulk of the playing time against righties at second base. And you know, the more that they can play second, the more it probably helps to keep Asdrubal fresh because Escobar can move back to third on those days. And you know, you're trying to do your best to be able to keep all those guys together. But that's my guy is Van Meter. I really like him, and we'll see whether or not I don't know if he's going to be a really good player, but I've seen enough that I'd like to see more, if that makes sense.
I totally agree on Van Meter. I do. I think he's, out of a lot of the young guys, he's the guy that I'm very much excited about. I think we'll see J.B. Buskauskas come up very soon, too. I don't think he's that far away. I think they're going to have to rely. They're going to have to bring him up. I really expect that. I want to ask you about the Sunday start, though. Madison Bumgarner, the first three were awful. Well, you know, what are you hearing? What are you guys discussing when you're not on, when the mic's not hot about Madison Bumgarner?
Well, we're trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, you know, you have to go back 10 years where he had a stretch like this to open the season. I mean, it's 2011, and that was, you know, he'd made what one set of playoff appearances in 2010 with the Giants, but it was before he had, you know, kind of become this mythical creature in the postseason. You know, I'm looking for things inside the game that, you know, give me hope, you know, like things that I can try and hope signal something. So take this with a grain of salt if you want. But I thought in the fourth inning of that last start, he started being able to get the ball into righties away from lefties better than he had been, more to his spots. And I think he started to do that a little bit in the fifth, and while he got away from his fastball some in that inning, I also think he kind of ran out of gas because he'd been grinding really hard to get to that point. I want to see if he can do that, if he can use that be able to get that fastball and his cutter into righties away from lefties more consistently, hitting the glove more consistently. I think that's going to be a good thing. I know just a little bit ago, Matt Hurd just talked about him using his fastball more. That's been something that they've really talked about. And it sounds like they're going back to just trying to get a feel of execution in his between start bullpen session. And I'm curious to see what happens on Sunday. But I as bad as it looked, and the results were not good, and they have not been good, and if anybody wants to say you're a fool for having hope, that's fine. I can take it. But I do think there were a couple things that he saw in his last start that give me hope that he's about ready to turn a corner. And he even said it, too. He's like, I feel like I'm just about ready to get over that mountain, and he just hasn't had a click yet.
Mike, good stuff as always. We appreciate it. Thanks for coming on for a few. We will talk to you very soon, okay?
All right, sounds good.
You got it. Mike Farron joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, Tommy Lloyd, officially introduced as the new head coach of the U of A basketball program. The reaction to his hire been all over the place. We'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
Let's introduce our Twitter poll question of the day. Sarah is here with us. She's got it. Hi, Sarah.
Hey.
What do you have for us today?
Okay, as you mentioned at the top of the show, the Phoenix Suns with win number 40 this season. Over the Sacramento Kings. Shout out to our guy Dakota for willing that win.
That's right.
We are asking, what does that number, 40 wins, mean to you as a Suns fan? Three options for you to vote on. I'm sure there's some overlap, but choose what's closest.
Okay.
Closest to you. What does that number mean to you as a Suns fan? It is big that they reached 40 wins given, the last decade. It's cool to enjoy, but moving onward. Or I only care about the playoffs.
Oh. I don't want to say I only care about the playoffs. I'll go with the middle one.
Cool to enjoy, but moving forward?
Yeah, cool to enjoy. Like, I'm going to enjoy that. It's been... Listen, somebody said, maybe it was Vince Murata. Like, we have to enjoy this, right? We can't not... It was 10 years of freaking misery.
Right.
To not enjoy this, you're doing yourself a disservice. You're doing yourself a complete disservice to just say, I only care about the playoffs. Man, this has been fun to watch every game.
You know what?
Yeah, that's awesome.
I was on the fence. I was going to pick the middle option, too. It's a big deal. I'm going to pick the first option because I think for a team, for 5 years, we basically had hoped they could get to 30 wins, and they just blew through that and got to 40. It's a big deal. I think it's a big deal they got to 40 last night with the win over the Kings.
I'll take the second one because I care about it. I care that they're winning games.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Survey says?
53% of our voters went with that first option. They're enjoying this moment. 40 wins is a big deal.
Enjoy it.
And they're soaking it up. Yes. 30% went with the second option, cool to enjoy, but eyes ahead. And then 18% only are looking at the playoffs.
Yeah, I get the only looking at the playoffs thing, but you got to enjoy the ride a little bit.
Yes.
You know, the playoffs will get here soon enough, and soon enough we'll...
I mean, just looking at what's happened with Utah today and the Nuggets, what was that, last week?
Yeah, like, with Jamal Murray, yeah. Enjoy it.
Enjoy what is in front of you right now.
Yeah, and by the way, the Utah Jazz did win that game. They were down 9 when Donovan Mitchell went out in the third quarter. They won comfortably against Indiana today. That's a really good win for the Utah Jazz.
It is.
To do it without Donovan Mitchell. And obviously, everybody's waiting on the MRI. The x-rays were negative on his ankle injury, but he had to be helped off the court. Tommy Lloyd was introduced today as the new head coach of U of A basketball. Thank you, Sarah. You can find that's on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. It was yesterday that Tommy Lloyd was introduced. And he says, I can't wait to connect with the former U of A players who didn't think I should get this job.
I know the value of former players sitting at home watching their team play on TV and the pride they feel when they watch that. I want to give those guys everything I got. And you know what? I don't have to be the guy they wanted for this job. I'm okay with that. They should be pushing their teammates. And if they were doing anything other than that, I'd probably question them. But moving forward, I can't wait to wrap my arms around them. Okay, ask them to help me on this journey. Do anything I can to move this program forward.
It has been very interesting to watch the reaction to this hire and how it has really run the gamut in terms of the variety of reaction, right?
I do, but I think a lot of that may change today. I mean, he landed a 4-star 7-footer out of your neck of the woods.
This kid from Perry.
Dylan Anderson. Now I'm reading, you know, about this kid right now, and he had offers from Creighton, Colorado, North Carolina, ASU, Cal, 7-footer with stretch 4 potential. Arizona Republic had him the number one player in Arizona. He's a top 50 player, and I read this quote from his father. His father said, Coach Lloyd has made it crystal clear that Dylan was his number one target at Gonzaga. So he was considering Gonzaga, too. So when he saw the news, it was an absolute win for the family. Dylan gets to stay home and represent Arizona.
Yeah.
And we love everything Coach Lloyd is about. He has a 20-year proven history at Gonzaga. For us, it couldn't be a better situation. So you come out of the gates, right? You're announced. A day later, you got a 4-star recruit that's being recruited by a lot of top competitors, and you get him. You land him. Like, okay, we're moving on. Like, we'll talk to the alumni and we'll make it all work. We'll make it work. I got a recruit right now. I got a good players to come here. He just got a 4-star recruit.
Yeah, it certainly helps with the perception. There's still a lot of work to be done with the former players, but among the fans, among the boosters, yeah, you bet. That is a really nice way for Tommy Lloyd to start. There's no doubt. It's really been all over the map. Dana O'Neill wrote a column for The Athletic a couple of days ago. She raved about the hire. She said it's a potential slam dunk for U of A in that everything that they did at Gonzaga, they can do at U of A, but they can do it bigger and better because it's a public institution, a state school, and they've got far more money to be able to throw at it. You know, so Gonzaga, you know, sometimes it might be hard to convince a guy to go to a sleepy little town like Spokane in the middle of eastern Washington where people aren't that familiar with it, whereas Tucson is the beautiful Southwest. It's warm, the weather's awesome, things like that, and there's a lot of money behind it. Then on the other side of it, there's our guy John Wilner. I said, look, it's risky. And the reason why it's risky is because if you think that U of A is a blue blood or near blue blood type program, those programs don't hire assistants who have never been head coaches before unless they've got undeniable ties to the program through their history, a la Hubert Davis or somebody like that. He went through a list of the teams that he would consider to be blue bloods. None of them have hired an assistant coach without any head coaching experience who had no experience coaching that program or playing within that program at all. other than U of A. So the reaction's been all over the place on this one.
Right, and I think, what was it, The Athletic that called it a slam dunk?
Yes, that's
today?
What I said a second ago. Yeah,
so The Athletic says it's a slam dunk, and Willner says it's a risk, and we don't know. Like, we don't know. If he can recruit and get great players in here, then it's a slam dunk. If he can't recruit and he's strong, then it's a risk. I mean, he has said that he's going to, like, they are going to fish in all waters when it comes to recruiting. So they're going to be looking at all the top players in the country. They're going to be looking at European players. I mean, I don't, like, it's, everybody's going to have an opinion on this right now. But every once in a while, don't you need to take a risk? Every once in a while, you need to be a risk taker.
Of course.
I mean, it's, you know, there's advantages. You take, sometimes there's advantages to being a risk taker. The risk-reward philosophy, right? Sometimes you don't get the reward without the risk. So going after him, they may have bucked some trends and everything, Bernsie, but you know, if he could get this program and keep this program as one of the top programs in the country, then it's going to be a good hire.
It's not just us here in Arizona paying attention anymore. The recent play of DeAndre Ayton is beginning to open eyes everywhere around the NBA. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.